The Early Years, 1827 to 1862, Volume 1, Chapter 32. 1862, the year 1862 closes on an upbeat. At the weekend conference held in Battle Creek in connection with the annual meeting of the Seventh-day Adventist Publishing Association in October, 1861, those who attended hammered out the basis on which local churches could be organized. They proceeded to organize the Battle Creek Church and then the Michigan State Conference. Then the following action was taken, result, that the first session of the Michigan State Conference of Seventh-day Adventists be held at Monterey, Michigan, October 5-8, 1862. The Review and Herald, October 8, 1861. First Annual Session of the Michigan State Conference. An early call for this conference session was published in late August, that all the churches may have ample time for the election and instruction of their delegates. The Review and Herald, August 26, 1862. As the time neared, a cordial invitation was extended not only to church members in Michigan but to ministers and believers from other states as well. In anticipation of the conference to be held in Monterey, completion was hastened of the commodious house of worship. It was 40 by 60 feet, Ibid, September 16, 1862. Those attending the conference were urged to come expecting to stay till Tuesday morning, as the business of the Publishing Association and conference will probably hold till Monday night, Ibid. There was some misgiving that this conference, being held somewhat away from the center of the state, might be poorly attended. But the fears did not materialize. Uriah Smith, in reporting the gathering, stated, "Brethren were present from all sections of the state, to the number, as it was estimated, of not far from 500, besides a few from New York, Ohio, Indiana, and Wisconsin," Ibid, October 14, 1862. James White preached Sabbath morning in John Loughborough in the afternoon. Preaching time on Sunday was shared by Moses Hall and James White. Sunday morning, some of the residents from the community crowded in. Before the meeting was adjourned at noon, the center supports for the floor, thought to be fully adequate, gave way and the floor settled 8 inches in the center. The floor was repaired during the noon hour, and meetings continued through Sunday and Monday. Uriah Smith reported, "There were two social meetings, which were seasons of interest and encouragement." Sister White also spoke several times with usual freedom and power, to the acceptance of all lovers of the pure and straight testimony. Her words cannot fail to have effect upon the hearts and lives of those who heard, Ibid. Publishing Association business was completed on Monday, October 5. The business sessions of the conference ministers present belonging to the Michigan Conference were James White, J. H. Wagoner, J. B. Frisby, John Byington, J. N. Loughborough, Moses Hall, M. E. Cornell, R. J. Lawrence, and Joseph Bates. Bates now resided in retirement in Monterey, only 2 blocks from the meeting house. He was asked to serve as chairman of the conference. There was much to be accomplished in the business meetings. First, the examination of the standing of the churches, their memberships, and their wishes in relation to being taken into the conference. This accomplished, study was given to ministerial credentials and the assignment of ministers to fields of labor. Now that there was an official Seventh-day Adventist church body, with long-standing, acknowledged leaders to guide in the work of the church, particularly in Michigan, attention could be given to more general resolutions. One read, "Whereas, we believe that the Lord has called Brother and Sister White to labor among the churches, and, whereas, the state of the cause in the several states demands their labor, therefore, result, that this conference recommend Brother and Sister White to labor in different states, and assist in organizing conferences and churches, as the way may open before them," Ibid. Matters for conference consideration. The minutes of this conference session set forth some interesting items. Of business that Elder Sanborn brought from Illinois and Wisconsin, calling for the opinion of the conference. 1. How shall we treat divorced marriages? 2. Shall preachers from other denominations embracing the message preach and baptize among us, on the strength of their former ordination and standing as ministers? 3. Shall young preachers, before being ordained, be allowed to baptize? 4. Shall T.E.M. Steward have a letter of commendation as a preacher among us, Ibid. Steward was the minister deeply involved in the fanaticism that broke out in Mauston, Wisconsin. After satisfying themselves to the full intent of the first question and ascertaining that what was involved was the accepting into church membership those couples comprised of individuals who had been divorced on grounds other than the violation of the seventh commandment, actions were taken as follows. 1. Resolved, that the matter of divorced marriages be referred to the conference committee. Diligent search fails to disclose any report on this perplexing item. 2. Resolved, that ministers of other denominations, embracing present truth, should give proof of being called to preach the message, and be ordained among us, before administering the ordinances. 3. Resolved, that no person, young or old, should administer the ordinances before being ordained. For, in reference to Brother Stewart's case, it was suggested that further time be allowed. The conference saw fit to take no action in the matter ibid. The feeling prevailed that Stewart's position was somewhat akin to that of a young minister, allowing him time to give proof of his ministry before endorsing him again for that sacred work. It was felt best, however, to leave the matter without record. The closing actions of the conference called for the next state conference meeting to be held in Battle Creek, October 2 to 5, 1863, and that the state conferences be invited to meet with them by delegates in general conference at our next annual conference. The subject of a general conference that would bind state conferences together surfaced again from time to time. This would be the crowning step in organization. Uriah Smith, as he reported the conference, pointed out that our pilgrimage heavenward lies through a pathway that is rough and thorny, but that the conference at Monterey would be looked back upon as an oasis in the desert. It was clear that organization of churches and conferences was paying off. He observed, the meetings were harmonious, and the brethren unanimous in their conclusions. Ibid. Organization of the General Conference. The matter of a meeting referred to as a true general conference could not be put off for a year. By April 1863, James White was calling for such a meeting to commence Wednesday, May 20, 1863, at 6 p.m. to secure the united and systematic action of the Friends of the Cause in every part of the White Field, Ibid, April 28, 1863. At the appointed time, 20 delegates assembled in Battle Creek. They examined and accepted credentials and undertook the work before them. The minutes read, "For the purpose of securing unity and efficiency in labor, the promoting of the general interests of the cause of present truth, and of perfecting the organization of the Seventh-day Adventists, we the delegates from the several state conferences hereby proceed to organize a general conference, and adopt the following constitution for the government thereof." Ibid, May 26, 1863. There were 9 articles in the constitution, specifying the name General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. 3 officers were called for president, secretary, and treasurer and an executive committee of 3, of which the president was to be one. Article 5 was perhaps the most important, for it made provision for the uniform distribution of labor and the uniform handling of funds. An election of officers and an executive committee was the next business. The minutes report an interesting turn. The Committee on Nominations reported as follows: for president, James White. Secretary, Uriah Smith. Treasurer, E. S. Walker. Executive Committee, James White, John Byington, J. N. Loughborough. On motion, the conference proceeded to vote on the nominations presented. Brother White was unanimously chosen president, but declined to serve. After a considerable time spent in discussion, the brethren urging reasons why he should accept the position, and he why he should not, his resignation was finally accepted, and Elder John Byington elected as president in his stead. The nominations for secretary and treasurer were then ratified. J. N. Andrews and G. W. Amidon were chosen as the remaining members of the executive committee. Ibid, Uriah Smith, reporting the conference, declared, "Perhaps no previous meeting that we have ever enjoyed was characterized by such unity of feeling and harmony of sentiment. In all the important steps taken at this conference, in the organization of a general conference, and the further perfecting of state conferences, defining the authority of each, and the important duties belonging to their various officers, there was not a dissenting voice, and we may reasonably doubt if there was even a dissenting thought. Such union, on such points, affords the strongest grounds of hope for the immediate advancement of the cause, and its future glorious prosperity and triumph." Ibid, page 204. Organization in its fullness was at last attained. All could praise God and rejoice. The last few weeks of 1862. But back to the closing weeks of 1862. It was clear that there was a general understanding that James and Ellen White were much needed in the field, to keep in close touch with and build up the churches. Plans for November called for them to attend quarterly meetings in Monterey, November 8th and 9th, Wright, November 15th and 16th, and Greenville, November 22nd and 23rd. Before the itinerary was over, it had stretched to 4 weeks to include the church at Orleans, November 29th and 30th. With the matter of organization largely settled, attention could be focused on spiritual revival. Ellen White's diary for November gives many details of the work done. She and her husband left Battle Creek Friday morning, November 7th, for the 50-mile drive by carriage to Monterey. They arrived very weary. Sabbath morning they began their work, and the Spirit of God led them into a somewhat new and promising line in evangelism, that of special work for the children and youth. A burden for the youth of the church, the diary record reads, "In Monterey we held meetings for the benefit of the young. We felt that there had not been that interest manifested for or labor bestowed on the youth that there should have been. Ministering brethren, as they have labored in different places, have seen so much to do to get out important points of truth before the people that they have neglected the young and have failed to reap that harvest which they might. Manuscript 9, 1862. As she and James seemed called upon to press forward with this special and promising work, she described what took place. The meetings held in Monterey for the benefit of the children were, I think, the best and most profitable to the church of any which we attended. As we entreated the young to come to Christ, there was not a child present whose heart was not affected. There was nothing like indifference, but all began to seek the Lord and to inquire, "What shall I do to be saved?" All those who wanted to be Christians and desired the prayers of God's people were invited to occupy the front seats, which by request had been vacated. Here was a cross for the young. We knew if they could take this first step they would gain strength to take the next, for by so doing they testify to all present that they chose to leave sin in the service of Satan and become Christ's followers. One after another came forward until nearly the whole Sabbath school who were old enough to know what sin was had filled the vacant seats. Oh, how anxious we felt for those dear, weeping children that they might turn to the Lord with full purpose of heart and be accepted of Him. We felt like taking these dear children in the arms of our faith and laying them at the feet of Jesus. We felt assured that He would say, "Son, or daughter, thy sins be forgiven thee." And we knew that the Lord was working for us to bring these dear children into His fold. Ibid, this was Sabbath. Tuesday, 10 young ladies were baptized. Ellen White, writing of it, said that they saw no light in keeping these children 6 months or a year before being baptized, to see if they were true to their profession. In fact, not even 1 week. It was their privilege, she wrote, to be baptized after they repented and believed. Ibid. She mentioned one case in particular. One dear child we deeply sympathized with. Through a constitutional difficulty, she had never been able even to witness one baptized. But while she with her young companions sought the Lord, she decided that she must be baptized. She came with her young companions to the water, but her difficulty returned. She could not look upon the water or see any of her young friends baptized. All had been baptized but her, and she could not be prevailed upon to go into the water. We felt that Satan was opposed to the good work begun with her, and wished to hinder it, and that she must go forward. Her parents, with us, felt that if she left the water unbaptized she would never have strength to follow the example of her Savior. We all were anxious that she might obtain a victory there. I put the robe upon her and urged her to go into the water. She hesitated. We looked up in faith to God. My husband on one side and I upon the other and her father entreating her, we tried to encourage her along, yet her peculiar dread of water caused her to shrink. We persuaded her to move to the edge of the water and have her hands and head wet. She complied. There was a united looking up to God that Satan might not prevail. Her head and hands were wet, and then she moved forward while the administrator several times repeated these words, "In the name of the Lord, move forward." Calmly she went into the water and was buried in the likeness of Christ's death. Calmly she came up out of the water, having followed the divine command, and we all felt rejoiced that we did not consent to let the child go. Ibid. The meetings continued the next day, and 5 young men gave their hearts to the Lord and were baptized. Then James and Ellen White pushed on to Wright, where the church was now well organized. They traveled over rough and muddy roads, with 2 or 3 miles of rough logways. For this part of the journey Ellen White walked. Victories at Wright and Orleans. Our meetings in Wright were blessed of God. We labored especially for the young and were encouraged as we saw that our labor was not in vain. 9 Sabbath-keeping children manifested their desire for salvation, and each had strength to take the cross. With broken hearts they bore their testimony. Ibid. Wednesday afternoon 11 were baptized, 9 of them young people. Then the traveling workers pressed on to Greenville for the meetings of the next weekend. Ellen White wrote, "We traveled Thursday afternoon over crossroads, mud, sloughs, and logways. Again I went on foot a portion of the way because the roads were so bad. We traveled all day Friday to get to Greenville. Arrived there before sundown. Ibid. At Greenville efforts to get the church fully organized took the couple's time and strength. There was opportunity for only 1 meeting for the youth. There was a good response, and 7 were baptized. Though they had filled the appointments made for them in this part of Michigan, they felt they could not return to Battle Creek without meeting with the church at Orleans, so they extended their itinerary 1 more week. After a profitable Sabbath and Sunday there, they started back to Battle Creek, holding some evening meetings en route. As James White reported the month-long carriage trip, he commented, "We look back upon this tour with great pleasure, and hope the time is not far distant when discordant notes among us will cease, and order and sweet harmony will prevail, and the Lord will work among our people everywhere." The Review and Herald, December 9, 1862. Triumphant year-end meetings at Battle Creek. With this taste of youth evangelism, it was not difficult for James and Ellen White to plan for year-end meetings in Battle Creek, with special efforts for the children and youth. They recognized that if success were to attend this type of ministry, more than meetings on Sabbath and Sunday were called for, plans were laid for what White termed protracted meetings. The first was to commence on Tuesday evening, December 23rd, and carry over the Sabbath, December 27th, and then a second series to begin the next Wednesday and continue to Sabbath, January 3rd. In advertising the meetings in the review, James White declared that the brethren will be happy to see a general attendance of the brethren from surrounding towns. He urged, "Come with your children, prepared to labor for the revival of the church and the conversion of the youth and children." Ibid, December 23, 1862. A week later he reported that the results of the first few days of meetings were excellent and urged good attendance at the next series that would open Wednesday night and terminate with a baptism Sabbath afternoon. In the midst of the second series, Loughborough and Byington came back to Battle Creek from a tour among the churches to the north. They reported a revival among the youth and children in the meetings they had been holding. God's Spirit was at work. James White's triumphant report of this work with the young people of the church at the close of the old year and the commencement of 1863 reads, "Several brethren came in from other places to enjoy this meeting with us, and the evening commencing the Sabbath we had a full and deeply interesting meeting. Many of the young spoke, among them the eldest son of Elder J. H. Wagoner, whose confession and stated resolutions to be a Christian caused tears of joy to flow. On the Sabbath, January 3rd, our place of worship was full. We baptized 15, among them our two oldest sons. In the afternoon we had a communion season, in which not far from 200 participated. We think the Battle Creek Church never enjoyed a better Sabbath." Ibid, January 6, 1863. The church prepared for development and expansion with confidence renewed in the spirit of prophecy and growing in experience. The Seventh-day Adventist Church with its 3,500 members was on the verge of increasing lines of development. These would include an understanding of the relation of health to religious experience, and lead to the establishment of health and educational institutions. They would also include an understanding that the whole world was before them, to win for Christ and His kingdom those who would lend an ear. What a challenge!